Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. I'm Chris Wilmerding, your host. The show is a series of conversations with business owners about their beliefs and values and which beliefs and values they want to share with the next generation. If you want to be a guest on the show, simply wait until the end of this 20-minute segment and we'll provide a link. Simply sign in at that point and we'll be in touch with more information. Now, let's get on with the show.
Welcome again, ladies and gentlemen. This is Paul, your special guest with the Legacy Podcast. And today we have a very special guest. It's Sunny Han, the CEO of Fulcrum Pro, to talk a little bit about his ideas behind leaving a business legacy. So welcome, Sunny.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So Sunny, before we kind of dive into legacy and everything else, why don't you tell us a little bit about what Fulcrum Pro is and, how it came to be?
Fulcrum is what we consider to be the future of ERP for manufacturing. Before I started the company, I worked with a lot of small businesses. I learned to code as a little kid. My mom was a graduate student at the University of Minnesota and couldn't afford daycare, so I hung out at the computer labs for a while and wrote some software as a kid, but really didn't know anything about manufacturing until after I graduated college and started working in consulting. So after 10 plus years of working with small businesses, selecting ERP systems, implementing them, writing custom software on top of them, decided to create a new way of delivering and distributing an ERP software to a manufacturer and also trying to create as much value as possible. So we've been at it for about 6 years. We have our product completely built. We have quite a few customers. We're growing really quickly. We secured some venture funding recently, and we're just trying to continue to push the envelope forward. So,
and for those of you who don't know what ERP is, what does that acronym stand for?
You can think of it as an operating system for a manufacturer that manages all their data, what you're building, how you're building it, when you're building it, who you need to buy stuff from to build it. What we really want to do is we want to get this effect where the manufacturing company can focus specifically on what they know how to do best, which is make really good parts and make really good things. And we'll help them to automate and make as smooth as possible all of the rest of the processes. There's just a lot of technologies that are available now that just haven't hit this particular market yet. So for us, we really want to push better decisions, live decisions, as easy as possible. It should be built for the end user so that there's really no training, no effort. I'm sure all of your listeners can remember really, really bad software that was hard to use. Well, unfortunately, a lot of the business world is still using incredibly antiquated software.
Yeah, we find that a lot where just because, for example, a software system is the largest software system doesn't necessarily mean anything if it doesn't impact the end user. So if you have these large enterprise software systems and it's not user friendly and you have to go through four or five clicks and it actually increases the friction of actually getting the work done, then you might as well have just thrown away your money. So
that's right. Yep.
I can definitely relate to that. So you said this was 6 years. What did you do before this?
I worked in consulting for a long time. I wrote custom software for a long time. Just bumbled around, to be honest. After school, I kind of didn't know what I want to do. So consulting is a good home. You get to see a lot of different things. But I think a lot of it was also just a lack of discipline. Thinking about creating something, I think, speaking of legacy, being able to feel like you've contributed something, right? Like somebody said to me once, like all of the things that we have today, all of the roads and all of the buildings somebody built, and am I working on something that will contribute to the next generation's utility? And I don't really think I was that much in all previous roles. I was making money. I was successful in other ways from a professional standpoint. But yeah, I think one of the reasons why I was motivated to start the company is that I wanted at least an opportunity, a chance to try to create something that would affect future generations.
And in consulting, was there a specific type of niche or industry that you were focused on, or was it all different types of companies?
a lot of different types of companies, but I spent a lot of time in manufacturing and in construction. Those were kind of the two niches that I spent a lot of time with. And most of my clients were in the few million dollars to few hundred million dollars range. So large to medium to small family-owned businesses, multi-generational, second, third, fourth generation. You know, as you might imagine, a lot of businesses fail on that generational change, right? So a lot of the work that I was doing was creating systems and helping with transitions, making sure that systems were in place to make sure that the exiting founder or executive or leader or, you know, head of the family and also head of the business, whatever essence that they had, all the thoughts and all the knowledge that was in their head extracted out in the form of systems for that company. So that was a lot of what I did for quite some time.
It's fascinating. There's so many different variables that you have to deal with, whether it's psychological, emotional, technical, all these different moving parts. And for some, it can be a little bit chaotic, but for others, it can be, you know, hey, I'm home dealing in this chaos. Absolutely. So where do you, based on kind of where you're pivoting now, is where do you see the biggest opportunity for just overall in the next couple of years?
I think things are changing quite a bit everywhere. We did a lot of, in manufacturing specifically, there was a lot of offshoring to Southeast Asia, to China. I think those income and wage disparities are going to start shrinking over time. It just happens, right? And so there's going to be a lot of stuff that shifts around there. I think that a generational change is happening here in the U.S., both culturally as well as just from an age demographic standpoint. And we're just, I think, on the early end of it. We're not even close to the peak of it, right? There's still a lot of people that are just about to start making this change. And if you look at history, these are the times where the most amount of innovation, the most amount of progress changes at a systemic level. So I think that what we've seen in the last 20 years from an internet standpoint is adding an entire new hierarchy, right? Internet and information technologies and things like that that just didn't exist before. I think what we're going to see now is a fundamental fabric level change where the underlying relationships and businesses that exist and have existed for a long time are going to start shifting, and you'll see that bubble up to the top to everything. But I think it's both scary and exciting at the same time.
yep. Anxiety and excitement are the same exact, you know, physiological motion. So, So let's take a step back as far as just your overall. Well, let's say over the last 6 years. What would you consider one of your best financial or best business decisions so far?
I think I had a habit before, especially coming from the consulting world where it's project after project and like going from one thing to another. I think I made a change personally where I started to allow for things that we built and decisions that we made to mature and come to fruition before moving on to the next thing. And that's a balance, right? Like I want to grow as fast as possible. I want to move as fast as possible. But sometimes restlessness can be destructive. So I think the best decision was to really introduce more discipline for myself and a different framework. As I think individually as a person, it's really difficult to give yourself a framework. You can give other people frameworks. You can teach them way. You can share the way that you think. I think for me, controlling the way that I thought and making sure that I communicated that, made sure that was aligned throughout the entire company, I think that was the biggest change for us. It isn't anything like super sexy or super cool in any way. But I think that just having people know that out of the infinite space of where you can search for answers, this is the way that we work here as a company, that was really fundamentally changing for us as a company. And I think deciding that was hard because it takes courage, right? I think the fear that I felt was, what if I'm wrong? What if I want to work in this way? And fundamentally, it's not the right way to do things. And so I think I kept my options open to make sure that if I was wrong, I could like pivot and change. But really being confident and choosing a direction and saying this is what we're doing. And if we need to pivot, we're going to pivot all together. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds really subtle, but it was a big fundamental change in the way that I thought about running the business.
Has there been any major or, you know, significant pivots throughout the last 6 years?
Just more and more and more focus over and over and over again. In the beginning, I knew we wanted to work in this ERP space and for businesses in general. And you know, obviously drawing from my past, we worked with tourism companies, we worked with construction companies and manufacturing. And over time, we started to work far more with project-based companies and then also manufacturing companies. And then instead of doing any sort of consulting work, we focused just on product work and things like that. So over time, we've focused more and more and more and more. And you know, we could have focused from the beginning, but again, I think it was just a lack of courage that prompted me to not do that. But all there haven't been any like huge pivots, for example, like changing the underlying structure of what we're doing. But there have been a lot of just cast away all the superfluous stuff, all the unnecessary things, all the things that, oh, we're going to take this particular client or we're going to sign up this particular customer. We could go into this direction or this isn't really in our focus, but why not do it? You know, it's not really greed that drove that. It wasn't like we wanted more revenue. It was just, well, maybe there's something here that I didn't know about that I wanted to explore. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really difficult to let go of that, right? It's really difficult to not chase after it. And I think the really big pivot, culturally speaking, is how do we make what we have as simple and as clear as possible? How do we focus on one thing until it's really magical? And I think that's a big change, culturally speaking, because it gets really hard, right? It's really exciting to build something new from scratch. The first like 80% of it is just pure creation, but it's really that last 20% that delivers the most value, but it gets tough. You build the wrong thing. You have to try again. Your conversations become 5 hours long of really digging deep into something. And so having that focus really gives you the excuse to have the discipline to really drive it all the way through, if that makes any sense. And so mm-hmm. I would say that we pivoted from an experimental company to a focused company. That's probably the biggest pivot we've made.
Yeah, one thing that you mentioned was being able to focus on your thoughts or gather your thoughts. Is there anything that you do to clear your head or to refine the way that you make decisions?
I've noticed that my best thoughts come like right after I wake up when I'm in the shower. And so there've been periods of time where I've experimented with like not having a phone near my bed at all. It's like in a completely other room and I have to walk to the bathroom and take a shower and think about things. I have like a little dictation device now that's in the shower that I can like talk to really capture those ideas. I think a lot of it is the computer of your brain is just thinking overnight and you need some time to like download all the thoughts that you've had. And so for me, having all of that come out in the morning, during my morning routine, having some time to kind of be unproductive, if that makes any sense. Like instead of jumping straight into something, just having half an hour set aside in the morning to just think and be and chill for a little bit. Mm-hmm. That has really helped me focus my thoughts because those thoughts end up being distractions throughout the day. And they also end up being really good thoughts. So getting them out, feeling like I'm not missing out on some like work product of my brain, that helps me to focus for the rest of the day.
Yep. Yeah. So I went to a tech school and one of our designs or one of our classes was called work analysis and design. And it talked about the cost of interruption. And that resonates with me where you have that attention residue where it takes a lot more time to switch between machines and thinking rather than just focusing and batching in one single area. So you just kind of brought up a little memory of when I was back in college. So mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say is your, not worst, but you know, more, yeah, I would say your worst financial, your worst business decision, I should say. Yeah.
There was a period of time where, so in the ERP space, one of the biggest challenges is integrating software with each other. All these systems are fundamentally really custom because we don't know what you want. We're going to build what you want for you, kind of like toolkits, if you will. Our philosophy is to do the opposite. You know, we talk internally about how traditional systems are like Lego kits that you can assemble. And we're like a bonsai tree where we've grown a lot and we're trimming back to give you exactly what you need. But for a while, we were really afraid of this integration problem. How are we going to work with systems that existed? So we did a lot of consulting work to practice. We did a lot of integration work. And I think we went down a custom software path where there were big dollar amounts, but a lot of uncertainty. And we probably delayed our progress towards having a really good product by about a year and a half, pursuing these consulting projects that ultimately didn't really make money, ultimately were really distracting. They were really stressful. You know, they really zapped a lot of like creative energy. You're basically creating for someone else, right? They posed collections issues sometimes when we're working with smaller businesses that had really big variances in their cash flow. And so if you look at it in retrospect, it wasn't a good financial decision from a profitability standpoint. It wasn't good culturally. It wasn't good long-term. There was no long-term investment in our own stack or in our own infrastructure. I think it was just overall a really big miss in terms of how to use our energy. So I would say that it wasn't any one decision, but it was, like I said earlier, kind of a lack of discipline that led to a bunch of decisions all along the same vein. And so we probably had like five or six consulting projects that we should have just said no to. So,
yeah. What did you learn about yourself in that going through that process of figuring out how to narrow down your focus?
I learned that I was trained to be a yes person, right? In consulting, you're a yes person. You say yes to whatever they want to pay you for, right? And it's your job to come up with new complexity to add more interesting things that could squeeze a bit more ROI out for your client. And I learned that if you want to build a truly long-lasting product, you have to be a no person. And that was actually really difficult because there's a dopamine hit when you say yes and someone gets excited and they want it, right? And there's a bit of anxiety that you feel when you say no. And what I learned through that was that saying no to things you didn't want to do is a right that you have as a human and as a business owner. And I think that for whatever reason, you know, I didn't learn that. And it's embarrassing to say that, but I think what I learned about myself is that I never taught myself like good boundary control, if that makes any sense. Like, this is the boundary of what I want to do. This is what drives value for my customers, for the society that I live in, for my company, for my people. I think establishing those boundaries is really, really important because no one else knows everything about the company as I do right now. And it's really hard for other people in the company and even customers to really understand what we're all about if I don't have the focus of where these boundaries are, right? So,
Yeah, it's the gift and the curse where you're extremely resourceful and people are asking you to do all these things and you don't know where those boundaries... I run into that exact same sentiment where it's, you know, there's a difference between you can versus you should.
Exactly.
So, glad you brought that up. All right, let's shift over. So all this... So building this company, figuring out how to compile your thoughts, how do you think this applies to your legacy or your definition of legacy?
I would love to be anonymous when I die, like that no one knows who I am, but that, you know, in the very twilight moment right before that time happens, that I have a sense that something that I did will last and have forward flywheel momentum for long after I'm gone, right? And I think that for me, it's about creating something that I would create if we were just a tribe of 50 people. And what would we want even in that case, right? Like, what would we want to have? And so I think about like walls and bridges, and I think about like tools and things like that. Like, what are we missing as a huge, like whole human civilization where 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, it'd be obvious that we would have this, right? Like, even now looking backwards, I think it's obvious that networking computers and people through devices is obvious. There's a huge amount of advantages, right? There's a lot of disadvantages to certain pieces of software and things like that that we don't have to talk about. But I think as a general, that took effort. It took people stringing up fiber optics. It took people making devices. It took companies making, you know, networking tools and hardware. It took software. It took all these things from all these different people. And now we have this utility. And this utility will last hopefully forever going forward. And it just is obvious. The interstate system, I think about that a lot. Eisenhower had to shove the interstate system through through Congress by using kind of a defense reason for it, right? To be able to land planes every 100 miles everywhere around the country. But looking back, having an interstate system was massively transformative for our country in terms of being able to deliver goods everywhere. Trucking is a huge industry, and getting refrigerated goods around the country has really helped with agricultural distribution, all these things, right? Like, for me, that is the feeling that I want, is to either create or contribute to something where in the future, looking back, obviously we want this. Obviously, this is going to be valuable for us as a civilization. So,
So yeah, that's the business side. Is there anything personal side that you would want either your family or your loved ones or anybody around you or your friends to know about you or remember you?
I think what I focus on as a person with my friends and personally with my family is spending as much time with them trying to understand them as possible. I think one of the rarest things that I've ever experienced as a person is somebody else truly understanding what makes me tick in a non-judgmental way. And there are some teachers and some professors and some friends over the years that have done that for me. And for me, that is what I believe the purpose of friendship and family is about, having a non-judgmental, really deep understanding for someone, right? Having even just a few moments where you feel completely understood, supported, and that somebody is like there for you in a way that isn't coddling and it isn't critical. It's somewhere exactly in the middle, right? It's just you being who you are. So I don't have like a ton of friends. I'm not a huge social butterfly where I have hundreds of different friends. But for the handful that I really spend a lot of time with, really, I enjoy and I hope that what they remember of me is that at some point in time, there was something that they felt like they weren't understood by their coworkers or their peers or their other family members and friends, but I was able to create a moment or have a moment where they were understood.
That's powerful. So for our audience, you know, everybody has a different answer, but what specific actions or steps would you share in regards to building a legacy?
Well, even like both before and after raising venture capital, it kind of doesn't matter what situation you're in. There's always a temptation to make short-term decisions to create more sales that next month, or to close a specific deal, or to hire a specific person, or to do something, right? And I think that urgency is really important, and it's really critical to any business that exists. But I don't think anybody's ever created a legacy through a series of intermediary transactions. Those transactions have to build towards something. And I think the realization is you don't have to know exactly what it's building towards as long as it's building towards something. You don't need to know exactly what tomorrow and next month and next year is going to look like, but patiently doing the work. Somebody recently said to me, like, there is no substitute for hard work. That sounds like one of those meaningless cliches, right? But I do think that there's a lot of truth in that, and is that all the times that I've made poor decisions, it's because I was too exhausted or whatever excuse there was to not do the hard work. And I would say that if you do the hard work, you don't try to take any shortcuts, and you're building towards something that is of importance, not just to you and to your wealth or whatever it may be, but towards value delivered to civilization, I think the probability that you'll create something lasting is much, much, much higher. So.
More of focus on the inputs and the journey rather than the external outputs.
Yeah, and try to increase your tolerance for the cycle in which those inputs relate to outputs, right? Like, if you just look at it from a mathematical standpoint, some things we can put something in and get something out really quickly. But there are other things that you put something in and put something in and put something in for two decades before something comes out. I mean, you kind of think about it in terms of compound interest, right? But I think there's a compound interest to how you develop your company. If you can just increase the knowledge that your company's employees have 15% year over year, you get the same effects as if you save 10% of your income year over year or something like that, right? Like, knowledge compounds, skill compounds, culture compounds, experience compounds. So I think trying to reach 25% year over year compounding of all those critical inputs will massively pay off in 25 years, right? 25% for 25 years is beyond what you can even comprehend as a human from a mental standpoint.
Yeah, that brings up another thought that I had in regards to legacy. So we've gotten some interesting answers when it comes to the wealth side. So when you think about money or finances or anything else, like how would you define, you know, what's your relationship with money? How do you interpret the use of money?
As a kid, I had none of it. Didn't really get an allowance. I worked for all the money that I had. I sold a bulletin board system port of a video game for $500 as a kid and cashed the check in quarters, because that's really the only way that I understood money was what goes into a vending machine. Or
like that was your currency. Yeah,
exactly. And when I started working, I made a lot more money than I expected and spent a lot of it frivolously, you know, going out to eat and buying stupid things. But over time, I think that I've gotten, I wouldn't say frugal, but I've gotten a lot more bored with ways to spend money. I think for me, I'm starting to just getting a little bit of a glimmer of the true understanding of like capital allocation and like allocating resources and compounding that capital, and capital as a fiat for being able to exchange value for value. Like I know that at a conceptual level, I've studied economics, I can do the math, but I think I'm just starting to understand it really deep down inside on what the utility of money is and of what wealth is. So I wouldn't say that I'm an expert in any way, but I think that there is a transition that's happening in the way that I think about money, like literally in this moment.
Now, based on the last year, given the pandemic and COVID, you know, how has your business changed and how has your priorities changed as a result of everything that's going on?
I think for me, I was the only one in the office. Everybody was at home. I have an electric scooter and I just like scootered around the office by myself while I was on calls. Like my wife and I really did not spend that much time together before COVID, but with COVID, we actually ate lunch together every single day, like spent a lot of time together. So there were a lot of like cathartic, beneficial things about being alone during the pandemic that I'm somewhat afraid of losing and trying to make sure that I make time for going forward. Those are just things that I didn't value, a routine. I didn't value that, you know, having exercise every day. I didn't value that, like spending time with my wife every day. I didn't value that. And I think it took this simplification of my routine. There wasn't all this junk that was going on, right? To realize that those things are valuable. So I definitely want to preserve those things. I think from a work standpoint, we recruited most of the new hires we've had here in Minneapolis. I'm not sure exactly how we're going to work because so many people are new and haven't really ever worked in person before. So I'm trying to be as thoughtful as possible there on how we introduce that work environment and still balance it out. But I would say also that in other regards, in product development and design, we've increased our pace by 2 or 3x. I think because we've allowed for a lot of focus, large chunks of time. And so I'm really conscientiously trying to pull back as many meetings as possible to try to prevent some of that clutter that happens over time as you meet in person. Well, we're all here in the office, so we need to have a daily stand-up at this time, and we need to like all eat lunch together this time, and we need to peer pressure people to participate in that. I think that what we've learned is that people can culturally get along with each other and interrelate with each other without forced meetings like that, like eating lunch together or whatever it may be. So I think really trying to encourage peer-to-peer, point-to-point interaction, pair coding, 2 to 3 people design meetings, things like that, instead of huge meetings. It's like this concept of effectivity over efficiency. We want to do the most effective thing now instead of make sure that everybody's in the meeting together so that everybody hears it all the time. I think those pieces of information will diffuse, and if they don't diffuse, they weren't important anyway. So I think letting go of some of those burdens, if you will, that those are things that I want to be mindful of as we transition back into working in person.
Great. Any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience?
I think that in preparing for talking with you and thinking about legacy in general, I think that everybody has a different definition of it. But I would say that if there's, for me, there was a thought that I didn't deserve to work on something that big or wasn't capable of it, or that it was too hard. But one thing that I've really taken away over the last 3 years, at least, is that running a consulting firm and working on smaller problems and a bunch of different projects was no less hard than working on a big product that can affect millions of companies around the world. It's the same amount of effort, right? It's my maximum effort. I'm going to give my maximum effort to each of those things. So the only thing that I would say is that in looking around in the community in general to what people are doing, I think that if we just all aimed 20% higher in terms of the reach that we want to get to, that would compound massively across what we can build for our civilization in general.
Well, thank you. This is Sunny Han from Fulcrum Pro. And just a last final plug, if you want to be a guest of our show, The Legacy Podcast, you go to www.businesslegacypodcast.com and book your interview there. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for listening to the Business Legacy Show. If you're a thoughtful business owner who would like to be a guest on this program, please visit businesslegacypodcast.com/guest. That's businesslegacypodcast.com/guest. Now, if you got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you do that, tag us with hashtag Business Legacy Podcast. Again, hashtag Business Legacy Podcast. Each month, we scour Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. We pick one winner from each platform, and you get crowned king or queen of that social media. What do you win? We're going to promote you and your business to our audience of over 150,000 people totally free. Now, can you hook us up in your podcast player right now? Please give us a thumbs up or a rating and a review. We promise to read it all and take action. We believe that a person's legacy is the most important thing someone can leave the next generation, and your feedback helps us fulfill our mission. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button. You know why? Because every week for 15 minutes, you are going to be inspired and motivated to leave a lasting and meaningful legacy. My name is Chris Womerding. Let's connect on the socials. You'll find all the stuff we're doing at businesslegacypodcast.com. Again, businesslegacypodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and thank you for being part of the Business Legacy Movement.